You are listening to The Vitals, a monthly podcast for all things oncology nursing. For even more content, check out oncologynursingnews.com or find Oncology Nursing News on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or LinkedIn. Hi everyone, this is Lindsay Fisher, Associate Editor at Oncology Nursing News. A recently published study found that the rate of cisplatin-induced hearing loss was higher in children either 5 or under the age of 5 compared with older children. For this episode of The Vitals, we spoke with corresponding author Dr. Bruce Carlton of the University of British Columbia Department of Pediatrics and the Division Chief of Translational Therapeutics about the study findings, the practicality or potential consequences of conducting routine audiological assessments between cisplatin cycles, and how future research on cisplatin-induced hearing loss may be based in the study of genetics.
University of British Columbia, Department of Pediatrics, and I'm the Division Chief of Translational Therapeutics. Right, so cisplatin is one of the critical medications that we use to save children's and adults' lives that have cancer. And cisplatin is actually a heavy metal, like lead. It's made from platinum. And just like lead has toxicity associated with its exposure, so does cisplatin. So it has therapeutic benefits. It also has harm that can be induced by its use. And so it's a balancing the beneficial effects of cisplatin with the potential for it to cause permanent hearing loss, which is irreversible, that we try to do with every cancer patient. And so this study was really about looking at children who have cancer and who is actually at the highest risk of hearing loss. And I've spent quite a bit of time in my life, almost 20 years now, looking at this drug and trying to understand who is at risk and why. Because two children that are the same age, same diagnosis, same dose, one can have hearing loss and one doesn't. So why is that one child susceptible? Are we overdosing that child if both children are alive and well and one got half the dose of the other? Did one get too much? You know, are we at risk of one that got less of the drug for relapse later? Those are all the questions that we ask. And so the part that we were trying to answer in this question was, is age important? Are young children at higher risk of hearing loss from cisplatin than older children? In pediatric medicine, people think we treat children, right? But in fact, we treat humans from birth, age 0, to 18, which is adult, right? So we treat an entire spectrum of patients. And as we develop across that age spectrum, our bodies develop, our defense mechanisms develop, our toxicity for certain agents, for example, develops. And that's exactly what this study showed, is that children that are younger actually face a higher risk of hearing loss than children that are older. We know that about 60% of children who get cisplatin to save their lives end up with some degree of hearing loss. 60%, okay? Very common. In fact, more common that you get hearing loss than not. And about 40% of children who get cisplatin will actually need hearing aids the rest of their lives as a result of treatment. And so one of the things we were interested in doing was following a large number of patients for a long period of time to see what happens with this heavy metal exposure of cisplatin. And first of all, you need to understand that pediatric cancer is rare. And what's even rarer are solid tumors. So most pediatric cancer is a blood-borne cancer called leukemia, but solid tumors, which are self-explanatory, are actually a rarer form of cancer in children than they are in adults. And so we actually collected 368 cancer patients who were children and received cisplatin and then followed their hearing assessments, their audiological assessments. And we looked at more than 2,000 of them. And so the idea was to see what happened to their hearing in patients based on age. So 3 years after starting therapy, 75% of patients 5 years old and younger, and 48% of patients older than 5 years of age had experienced cisplatin-induced hearing loss. So that's really a critical finding.
Yeah. And the study suggests that based on these findings, it may be necessary to have these audiological assessments for children under the age of 5 in between each cycle, correct?
Yeah. And so the international community's a bit divided on this issue. Standards are, you know, do a hearing assessment at the end of therapy. And to some extent, that makes sense, right? At the end of therapy, life-saving therapy, we look at hearing and we help to manage the patient with hearing aids or whatever other enhancements in their lives they're going to need as a result of damaged hearing. But again, the rate of hearing loss or the degree of hearing loss and when it occurs is different in children. And so what I'm trying to understand is the biology about why those differences exist. And so for children that go deaf quite early, what makes them different than children that may take a year or more to have significant hearing loss? And so it's by doing routine monitoring at every cycle of chemotherapy, every time they get cisplatin, they don't get it every day for several years. They get a few days of cisplatin and then they're off of it for a while and they get it again. And we call that cycling of chemotherapy drugs. And so at the end of every cycle, we should get a hearing assessment. We should follow the toxic course of this drug. I think the concern among some clinicians, legitimate concern, is that if patients or parents know that their child is developing hearing loss, they're more likely to say, do we really have to give this cisplatin? I completely agree that they would be more likely to say that if they could see the pattern developing. That doesn't mean that it's not a legitimate question. The issue is, what can that patterned analysis of following these children and their hearing loss tell us about the rates of hearing loss and the differences between us as humans? I study the genetics of these kinds of reactions. So I'm always interested why a 7-year-old that looks exactly like another 7-year-old, one is hearing loss and one doesn't, or one had hearing loss very quickly and one doesn't. And it's through seeing those patterns over time that we'll be able to better make decisions about what to do in the future to illuminate why these children are more vulnerable to hearing loss and how best to protect their hearing while administering the life-saving therapy.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. Thank you. The study also noted that there was an interesting connection between concomitant treatment with vincristine and the development of cisplatin-induced hearing loss over time. Could you explain a little bit about what the findings revealed about this association?
Yeah, so that this is something that only perhaps those of us in clinical pharmacology think a lot about, but it's the question about whether other medications that are being used at the same time might increase a given medication's toxic effects. And, you know, often referred to as drug-drug interactions or drug interactions. And so why is it that cisplatin, first the question is, are other drugs that are co-administered to treat cancer, do they make cisplatin more toxic to the ears? It turns out that vincristine does, actually. And so these effects are sometimes additive or even worse, synergistic when drugs are used together. And hearing loss is something that can occur from a variety of drugs. Diuretics, drugs used to reduce fluid overload in patients, like furosemide or Lasix, that can cause hearing loss. Antibiotics called aminoglycosides, like gentamicin or tobramycin, can cause hearing loss. Vancomycin has been associated in some studies with hearing loss, probably on their own. And then vincristine, cisplatin, probably on their own, there's one level of hearing loss. But when you concomitantly use drugs which are all toxic to hearing together, we seem to be getting worse effects. I guess that would make sense to people, but it often hasn't been examined because we've been focused on specific medications and their degree of hearing loss. And so one of the things that we were particularly interested in doing was to look at whether patients who, because of their cancer treatment protocols, got vincristine actually had worse hearing outcomes. And they did. And so that's very helpful for us to, again, understand who's at higher risk of hearing loss, getting chemotherapy, and then what to do about that. These are life-saving therapies. recognize. But at the same time, if we know who's likely to go to lose their hearing, we can plan and support these children better in the future. Most importantly, better understand the biology or the mechanism of why hearing loss occurs so we can actually protect the hearing. That's what I'm now working on, is experimental strategies to protect the hearing so that we can allow the drug to exert its beneficial effects, but preserve the hearing in these children. And I just want to make a specific note about the importance of hearing loss. Sometimes, you know, we refer to adverse drug reactions or drug-induced harm, I like to call it, as side effects. And I really think that minimizes the harm that is occurring. And I'm not suggesting that these drugs are bad. These drugs are great. These drugs have wonderful beneficial effects, but they're not all great. You know, automobiles are the same thing, right? They are wonderful gifts to humanity in terms of moving us from one place to another and the convenience, but they do have, you know, a dark side, which is injury and so forth that can occur, particularly when they're not operated properly. And drugs are the same way. We need to understand how to operate with them in the best possible way to maximize benefit and minimize harm. And hearing, maybe, you know, in a very crass way, people might think that, better that I have a live patient who's deaf than a dead one who has perfect hearing. Well, that's not the choice I think parents should have to make, or any of us should have to make. Why can't we have the beneficial effects without the adverse effects? And so that's the strategies that we're now working on. If you lose, even at a moderate level of hearing loss, you lose the soft consonant sounds in English. So if you and I were talking and I said, you know, it's really great you had hearing loss and to talk to you today, Lindsay, on Thursday, and tomorrow's Rye Day, these are the things that you heard because of your hearing loss, because it's the weekend, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Our conversation would be normal because you know language. You have the contextual ability to fill in those missing sounds and carry on an effective conversation with me. But if you're 2 years old and you lose your hearing and you've never had that contextual basis, it's much harder and more difficult for your social development to occur. And that's the problem that we want to avoid, is kids having to struggle even harder in a difficult world to keep up and to be like all the other kids, right? And so that's the important part of the work.
Yeah, and I think you make a really interesting point there with the linguistics and the social consequences. Where do you envision future research for cisplatin-induced hearing loss? Or I think you mentioned earlier, what are you currently working on? Could you provide some insight into specific projects you're working on now?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things. First of all, genetics are critically important in all of this. And genetics can help us predict who is more likely to have hearing loss. We've been doing that in Canada for more than 10 years now. We've tested more than 1,000 patients, and we do have some genetic markers that we've published and that we use to determine who's more likely to have cisplatin-induced hearing loss. It's not the whole story. We don't know every patient, why every patient gets hearing loss, but we do know that there are some genetic markers that put patients at higher risk. And so using those genetic markers to screen patients can help us identify those that are at higher risk. The next step is, if they're at higher risk, what do we do, right? So do we not use cisplatin? Can we use a lower dose? Would that be effective? All of those things need to be studied. Our focus right now is in using a compound that would essentially reduce hearing loss through a genetic strategy of enhancing what we have found to be a protective effect from a given gene. So that's what we're working on right now. We continue to develop, take in more patients and better understand the mechanisms of the genetic markers that we find. I think that's really critical. And the reason genetic markers are important is because we're all different as individuals. We are 99.9% identical on this planet as members of the human race, but that 0.1% difference equals about 5 million base pairs of different genetic code. And that's where to focus in my opinion, when you see some patients who tolerate cisplatin without any evidence of hearing loss, and some patients have profound hearing loss. And so is there a way that we can exploit the genetics of those patients who do not experience having hearing loss in those that end up with hearing loss? These are the strategies that my labs are currently working on.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Vitals. Be sure to never miss a beat with Oncology Nursing News.